Hey, hi everyone. This is On.net, and today we have Mitch Munster. Hi.
Hello.
This is a special show. We are not streaming live today. We are just recording, and it's also the week of the MVP Summit, which is why we have you here in the studio. You're an MVP.
Yes, I am.
And today you're going to talk about a subject that is actually rarely talked about, which is working in this industry with disabilities, and in particular autism, right?
It is. And the nice thing that has kind of been made apparent over Summit and the past year is exactly that. Microsoft has really made it a push, and Satya as well, that it's not just neurotypical people or people without disabilities, that everyone has their own superpower in a sense as a developer. Mm. And that means that there's talent available that we're not tapping into and using. So let's make our products, let's make our software, let's make our hardware to bring out that superpower and help those individuals.
Yeah, so not just that the software that we build enables all the people, but also that everybody can build software.
Yes.
Right? And you've built some pretty amazing stuff yourself.
Well, I like to think that it's amazing, but one of the things I've done is I'm working on a demo, as you may have known, to show that it's really easy to get started bringing in IoT, wearables, and mobile,
yep.
Which could easily be ported over the cloud. So there's the three big things that you're trying to focus, but also, too, that you can use these to now, as an individual with a disability or someone with autism or a parent or a teacher, that you can now use these things to start bringing that in to better understand yourself. I'm verbal, as I'm a verbal autistic, so I'm high functioning with Asperger's, but low functioning, there is no talking or very little talking. Mm-hmm. If there is talking, maybe it'll be sign language to start.
Yeah.
But there's still cues that our bodies are giving us. Even me, one of my biggest fears is, I haven't had my appendix removed yet. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you have.
I haven't.
But you've heard of stories, right? That's painful. Ow.
Yes.
A big thing with autism is your body's wired up differently. So my appendix might rupture and I won't feel it until it's almost too late.
So what does that mean? Does it mean you don't feel the pain, or you don't notice the pain?
My body doesn't register it. And with autism, too, it's a spectrum. So I might register certain things in a certain way where other people don't. For example, I have a hard time using an oven.
Mm-hmm.
Because even with three oven mitts on, it feels like my hand is being singed off. Yet I can take a shower and be beet red when I come out, like a lobster, and not have the same tendencies. Or I'll wear certain clothes like what I'm wearing right now, but another autistic may not be able to. Same thing with foods. And
so that sounds very unpredictable.
Well, it is, and that's kind of the unique and hard thing about autism is,
yeah.
The bigger thing, like you see the world differently.
Mm-hmm.
Just as someone with a different disability will see the world from their own thing, but even in the spectrum of autism, you see the world differently, and the world is different. But there are some commonalities, like, for example, anxiety, which is kind of why I built this. So, here what I have is the wearable shirt, which you can see, and this is actually flashing my heart rate right now, which is, mm-hmm. It's a nice 66, 67, kind of going down as I talk. And this now, it would obviously be a grid. Is talking from, which I right now have the band,
mm-hmm.
is getting my heart rate, going to a Xamarin Forms app that I built, which is really easy to get started, right? There's an SDK component out there, so you just drop and plug and play with that and do a little configuring. Then it does an HTTP call to the particle photon that I have here, which then goes and...
Could you raise it up a little bit?
Sorry.
Awesome, yeah.
Goes in and then... actually controls the grid, which I picked up from Adafruit NeoPixels.
Yep.
And the nice thing about the Photon, too, is, right, it's something that's, while it's not, running Windows 10 IoT Core, on a Raspberry Pi or something, which, you know, I could have used for this, but mm-hmm. I don't need all that power for this simple display. But also, too, I don't have to play, you know, guess the hardware or guess which Wi-Fi component goes with what I'm using. It's just right there, ready for me to go, and then I can configure the stack.
Mm.
Which, see, I lost Wi-Fi. Which is one of the downsides of using Wi-Fi and not Bluetooth is either, you know, you have a piece of hardware like what I have, the Jetpack, that likes to randomly restart, or, you know, Bluetooth may have been a better option, but it's that proof of concept that you start with. Which, you know, doing this, I learned that intentionally that I can actually control my heart rate because I've been doing training via biofeedback, which is something I recommend. If it's hard because biofeedback right now is not considered or bioneurofeedback is not considered a normal medicine by insurance. Yeah. So everything has to be paid for out of pocket. But it's kind of the same. They use the same tools of Jennifer Marsman does with her Project Oxford.
I'm not familiar with that.
Well, she uses a EEG for that, and she can like tell when someone's when her husband's lying or something like that, which I'm sure lots of people would love to have that for their spouses.
So, is it fair to say that today is a very special time in that you can build your own solutions that are exactly tailored to your specific needs?
Yes. You know, this was just something that I was like, okay, what could be helpful to anyone with autism or any other disability, but also to then people who may also want to do that. I know there's a big, I forget what it's called in San Francisco, but it's a big movement to get data on your body, which, and I hate to use this word, but, you know, like big data, you're getting all this info, but there's no, you know, education about what does this data mean. Mm. So they're using this to learn about themselves, but there really is no, oh, you know, you're doing this, or like, you know, Scott Hanselman, who has insulin.
Yeah.
You know, he's been doing some of this stuff for a long time.
And I know that he and other diabetic people have been very frustrated with what the industry has been providing as off-the-shelf solutions. So mm-hmm. they are taking things in their own hands and coming up with open source solutions.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Sure. And the other thing too, right? Security is a big thing.
Yeah.
You know, with Hanselman's device, I haven't looked too much into it, so I don't want to say the wrong thing, but, you know, with it's kind of there's another Bluetooth device on the market that does insulin,
mm-hmm.
but it's wide open. So yeah. Now, in a sense, someone who's malicious, there's no security saying we only allow access from this app or mm-hmm. doing this. And Bluetooth can have security on it. I'm not sure if a lot of people know that. But from there, right, if I was, you know, a malicious person and, you know, heard an announcement that someone did with that and I didn't like them, you know, you could easily get into this device and now just like, you know what, I'm going to, you know, cut you off from insulin or I'm going to spike your insulin up.
Mm.
And I could do serious damage to that person.
Or kill them.
Right? And it's part of our drug approval process right now. You know, not that they're not thinking about security, but they kind of have to take a look at what do I put out? Do I put out something that is filling a need that we don't have? Or do I keep that back so they can work on security?
Mm.
And unfortunately, that's, you know, it's being worked on and they're trying to solve that issue. But right now, the need comes before the security, which really should be together, right? I mean, right now, if I was to go take a med that would kill people, well, that's not going to get approved.
Mm-mm.
So why should a device that in the wrong hands could kill people get approved?
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see, but like you said, we can do this now as our own individuals. You know, we don't, obviously if we wanted to sell this commercially, we'll have an approval process to go through, but we can build tools to help ourselves now.
Yeah.
I just heard that there was OneNote was doing a project on a Surface where they take kids and they'll, you know, give them stuff to read on OneNote and through the camera, they'll study how that child behaves and they'll be able to help diagnose whether you have dyslexia or ADHD or things like that right? And that's a powerful tool. And that's, you know, with nothing more than a laptop, which we already need, and tools, right? If you get one Office, if you get, you know, Office 365, or if you have an MSDN subscription as an adult and you have a kid, you want to do this, so you have access to all these tools already.
Yeah, another thing that I've heard about recently that struck me as something really interesting to investigate is virtual reality that is being used to treat problems of like phobia, for example, where you can put people in a safe environment, you can confront them with their fears and treat that in a way that couldn't be done before. So.
True, and that is interesting. And you know, another big thing, right? We have the HoloLens. Yeah. It's still a work in progress in the first generation, but you know, the HoloLens, something like that, whether it's VR or AR, is going to be really great, not just for helping people, but when it comes to, you know, how as a developer, if you don't understand what it's like to be colorblind or to, you know, have autism, the fact that we can see fluorescent light cycling, and then we can see, you know, all the light cycle a different thing, and you're in a room with like 80 of them. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, we need you to focus on this computer screen 8 hours, where most developers take about 2 hours just to even get in their momentum.
Yeah.
You know, so as those tools evolve, we can start to give people that experience.
Yeah.
Granted, some of them, like the cycling, maybe, you know, people with seizures, you have to be careful of, but generally we can do that. Or, you know, what is it like to develop colorblind? If I'm colorblind to red, you know, what would your keyboard over there look like if I can't see the color red, or the, you know, the robot you guys have in the back corner there, right? That's purple, so it's a mixture of red and blue. What will that look like? Will it be more blue? You know, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So, and I'm really excited for the future.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Actually, you know, as developers, we get lots of bug reports saying, yeah, this is not accessible. The problem is not that we did something wrong. It's that we weren't aware of the problem because we don't live the problem. So.
Yep, there's a good anecdote of that. When the developer that they brought in, they featured that was blind, they were about how he codes. They had the Visual Studio team come in and, you know, watch him program in like a two-way mirror so they could affect him. Just, this is how you do it normally, and they had him code. And one of the things I noticed was, you know, the code window, for example, right? It's something we know how to use. But because it was not accessible, even though that's a main tab and a main feature, he wasn't using it. So his development experience was harder, right? Or you look at 2015 today, right? With, you know, I have ADHD, autism, and dyslexia. And one of the hard things that was hard for me, which I believe they're going to be fixing, or, you know, it's going to get better as they go through and study and we hear announcements come out in the future. You know, it's hard, right? You have this big method with all these different tasks or functions in there, and, you know, you want to find where your place is, and how do you keep focus on that when you have ADHD? And, you know, cause, and you can see, well, okay, you know, there's these kind of like little dotted lines that kind of show it, but, well, what if you also, you know, I have pretty good vision. I still need glasses. You know, we still have glasses. But what if it's harder to see? Or how do you focus on a really small line when your attention isn't there? You know, and come discover, like, you, I believe, you know, right now in 2015, you can change the color of that line, if I heard correctly. But, you know, it's something like that, a change in the color. You know, as a developer tool, which if you haven't already, and I don't know the team, this is what I use. I use, I believe it's called VizFora. Basically, what it does is it gives you your open and closing tags. It gives you different brackets. So, in, as it levels down, it changes colors. So, if I have that first level, right, that
I've seen that.
So, there's a class. It'll be orange in the open close, and then you'll have your method that you're writing. It'll be another color for the open and close, and then anything inside, like give you an if statement or you know whatever you might be writing in there. As you do brackets in there, it'll change different colors, open and close. Does the same thing for XAML, right? XAML is even trickier, right? That there's so much there. There may be dotted lines depending on what tools you have, but you know it's tricky. And the fact that it gives you that here's the open color, here's the closed color, lets you do that. Another one that I've used, which I think more developers are picking up than Viz4o, which is the Pro Tools.
Okay.
I have a hard time keeping track, I'm sure other people do as well, with how many tabs you have open, right? You need to reference other code. With the way the default setup for Visual Studio right now is, you know, maybe you can get like 8 different windows on top. So you're going to be scrolling. And, you know, even though our screens are more width centric than height centric, well, everything's trying to, oh, we have more width than height, so let's, you know, make these windows bigger, and let's the default, you know, solution window on the side, let's make that bigger, or, you know, we have all this stuff now that's taking up that width, so we really don't have that space. And yes, you can rearrange your windows, but you're still that. So with Pro Tools, you can move your tabs wherever you want. So you can move them to the left, to the right, and the bottom, and the top, like normally, and it color codes. So if I have, you know, a typical Xamarin app I might be building, will have, you know, an Android performs like an iOS and a shared code. All three, if I open code in there, will be different colors. And I can also pin it on the left, and it'll still keep those colors. I can sort it by project or by alphabet. So it really, you know, little things that are could be done by default in Visual Studio that could be turned on and off. Could be there, you know, even like how many times have you had, you know, like you drive, right? You use a map to go home or some new place. Time of day, it changes color, boom, now it's dark.
Yeah.
Right? But, and everyone's like, you know, why aren't you using dark theme? Well, it's the daytime. I can't see dark. But at nighttime, right, where I work better because my mind kind of quiets down or, you know, shuts up, that you can now code better. And I hear this from a lot of other autistic developers, is that, you know, the day there's so much stimulation, there's so much going on, and plus our brains are running a mile a minute that you can't focus. Where at night, right, you're getting tired, so the tiredness kind of cuts out that the way your mind works, and it calms down enough to do that.
Yeah.
So I mean there's so much going on, and right, the different tools, right? If you're a student, whether university or high school, as long as you have a student ID, there's DreamSpark. Or if they've changed the name now, what is it called?
I don't know. I should know. I probably should know.
I should know, because they just changed it. I've used it as DreamSpark so much. And now that I'm not working with a student partner, I forgot the name, but it's, you know, using that program is really great. And the fact that it's not just...
Yeah, we should probably say what the program is doing. So it's providing free licenses to students, academia as well.
Yes. So if you have a student ID, you can get access. So it gives you some Azure time.
Yeah.
It gives you Visual Studio. Yes. So it gives you access to all these tools, which is great because, you know, right, we're at a time now in our lives where we need to help kids get developing earlier. And they have, you know, kids... they have lots of ideas. You know, that's why, you know, the stuff we're talking about now with you know, building education into Minecraft, why that stuff is so powerful and can, you know, has more power and potential than some of the other programs. You know, there's a program that MIT created, and I forget the name of it. I'll probably remember it later.
The one where you drag.
You basically can code right in the browser.
Yes. Is it Scratch?
Scratch, yes. Yes. Right, and that's a great tool, but it's very... it's engaging as you would like a developer code window, where the education for Minecraft, right? That all came about because
kids are already interested in Minecraft, right? All of them,
right? And you know, what I heard, Miguel gave an anecdote on this, was, you know, his son, or, you know, his kids, you know, they're doing things like they're decompiling a Java, the Java libraries and what they need to make these edits and recompiling it, right? Yes. That's not a simple task. I mean,
no.
There's tools that help make it simple, but the task in itself.
But because they want to do something specific, they will just learn whatever it takes to get to that result.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I know there's some cool changes coming up that I'm not sure when they're going to be announced, but I know that there's really more power coming to that. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes forward, and hopefully, you know, these are more tools that I get access, whether it's, you know, that's for any children, not just disabilities.
Yep. What still sucks? What can we do to make our products and the output of our work more accessible to more people?
Well, you know, in a way, we've kind of already covered it. You know, there's the the first step, which is the you have the, you know, hey, we need to address these groups as well. We can't just leave them out. And that's usually the hardest step for our companies. So once you do that, right, we're doing that where we're starting to listen to accessibility's needs and enlist, bring in people. And, you know, I encourage others out there, you know, if you don't hear your disability talked about, but you know it's something like, you know, I can cover three, but even with each of those three, right, my dyslexia is different than another person's dyslexia. My autism is different than other people's autism, right? Mm. Your blindness may be different than other people's blindnesses or how you've coped with them, right? You know, there's a guy who can, you know, and he can hear around him, all right? Well, with a HoloLens, right, we can bring that in now and use that spatial awareness to help him or help people, not just him, sorry, anyone like that. Or, you know, so just really kind of look at the needs. And, you know, if you are a developer out there and either you have a son or daughter who is going with autism right now, you have the power to change that or help them get interested. If you know, if they can't code or they can't speak, you know, you have the power to get them engaged. Yeah. You have the power to now make things to try to help them. And then, you know, if you know, can, right, open source is going to be the best way to make these tools available, because these are all alternatives that insurance isn't going to cover. And I know there are a lot of people out there who, you know, money is an issue. And when you're trying to, you know, live off a low income and pay for your medical bills, whether it's, you know, for the tools you need for your disability or, you know, to pay for the counseling and the doctor's bills, that, you know, trying to make money off of this is, you know, it's just preventing people from getting those tools who need it.
Yeah, and here the power of open source and hackerspaces and community in general can be a game changer.
Yeah. Even, you know, too, if you find your child has an interest in something, you know, maker spaces are popping up all over. Yeah. See, try to get them involved. You know, they're really open to getting new people in there, because that's the whole point of a maker space, is allowing people to create things.
Yeah, and in those maker spaces, there are lots of people who know how to do stuff and want to help and are looking for new ideas to implement. So
yeah,
it's definitely a great thing to explore. So I love that message that people can be in power of their own solutions. I think this is fantastic. I'm really glad we had you on the show.
Glad you had me.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to see the future of Microsoft is, you know, going towards being open for everyone, not just everyone with quotes, and it's really just like you.
Yeah, certainly hope so. Okay, well, thanks again, and bye everyone, and we'll see you again next week.